If I lose on April 7th, I will carry the legacy of Donovan McNabb. State to state, city to city, arena to arena, I will get reaction after reaction of disdain. Because statistically I may be good, but I will never be able to win the big one.
Wow, John Cena wants to win the big one. What the hell have we been watching for the last 10 years? 12 world titles? He wants to win the big one at WrestleMania this year. Okay. That's the story they're telling. This is episode 267 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here on SDScoops.com. It is Sunday, March 31st, 2013. Want to wish everybody who celebrates out there a happy Easter here this Sunday. And I also want to send a note of condolences to Ric Flair and his family over the passing of his son Reed. On Friday morning, Reed was found dead in a hotel room that apparently he and Rick had been staying in North Carolina. Reed has been training in Japan for quite some time. I believe he was either in between tours or had just finished one. He was back here in the States, and for whatever reason, in their home state, they were staying at a hotel. I still don't quite understand that, but apparently Rick was the one who found his son unresponsive, called the police, and they discovered a short time later that he had, in fact, passed away. He was only 25 years old, which is just far too young for anybody to die. And for Rick to find his son like that, for any parent to lose a kid, has just got to be the absolute worst feeling in the world. Reed has had some very notable issues and run-ins in the past with drugs, in particular heroin, which is just a path to nowhere. And I, again, don't know for sure exactly what caused this, but I don't know too many 25-year-olds who die of natural causes. I know it happens, but it's very, very rare. So you can read between the lines on that. I'm sure in due time we'll find out exactly what happened here. But just a very sad situation, and condolences to the Flair family. You may have noticed the Sound Off has a new look this week, a new logo at long last. This is something I have been working on for a little while now over the last week, week and a half or so. It's just I was so tired of the old logo. In fact, both old logos. You may notice on SE Scoops, the really old, original Sound Off logo with the monster and the crate is still visible on the website every week, and I have disliked that logo for quite some time, but Webmaster Mike was quite fond of it. And our recent logo, which is fine, but, you know, change is a good thing, and this has been a long time coming, so hopefully you like it. If you want to, you know, send me your thoughts, let me know what you think. We've got that logo plastered all over the place now on Twitter, Facebook. This is the logo you'll see in the file each week when you download it, so wanted to make note of that. Also, two other notes here with respect to the show I just want to get out of the way. You can now add the Sound Off to your iPhone as an app. It's not in the App Store or anything like that. On your device, if you go to the mobile site, which is solomonster.podbean.com/mobile, and at the bottom of the screen in your browser, you will see a quick launch icon. You click that, and it will add the Sound Off to your home screen. You will see the Sound Off appear on your phone as an app. I know people have been able to kind of, you can add browser shortcuts to your home screen on your iPhone. Anybody can do that. This is a little bit different. I set up the icon. The icon that you'll see, by the way, is the Solid Monster illustration, because I have not been able to get the new logo condensed that small in such a way where it really looks good. So we're going with that icon. But you can get the Sound Off in the form of an app on your iPhone right now if you do that. So anybody who's interested, by all means, please do so. Also, if you would like to show your support for the Sound Off, and you like what you hear each week, you can now make a PayPal donation as a gift. Some of you have asked me about this before, and there really was no simple way for me to get that set up, and now there is. And you can go to thesolomonster.com. That is the official site where all the shows are archived. So if anybody ever has any issues on SE Scoops for any reason, which you should not, but just for your reference in the future, you can always go to thesolomonster.com and the shows will be up there and accessible. I've also revamped the thesolomonster.com is the actual domain. I've revamped the theme on that page, so that page looks a little bit different, has the new logo up and everything. You'll see the donate box on the right-hand side of the page. You may have to scroll down just a little tiny bit. You can donate whatever amount you'd like. You know, every little bit is appreciated. It is totally safe and secure. I sacrifice a great deal of time, put a lot of effort into making this the best show that I can. each and every week, as I have for the last 5 years. It's a one-man operation, no co-hosts, no producers, or anything like that. So if you are interested, you can head on over there, no pressure. And if you donate, you will get a special thank you from me. I can tell you that much. But there actually have been a few people who have inquired about that. I had been thinking about it for a while and finally got that set up. So if you would like to make a donation in any, pretty much any currency you want, I mean, it's dollars, Canadian dollars, euros, yen, Australian dollars, all of that, I think you're able to do. Please visit thesolemnmonster.com and you can donate there. And of course, I very much would appreciate that. Had two Layfield Report columns go up this week, for those of you who may have missed it. The first one went up earlier in the week. It was regarding Chris Jericho and Fandango, which is an official WrestleMania match now, and is probably the biggest opportunity of young Fandango's career, and how you really can't think of a better opponent for Fandango in his first match on the grand stage that is WrestleMania than Chris Jericho. You know, being in the ring with Chris Jericho gives this guy the best opportunity, I think, to succeed, go out there, make a great first impression, have a kick-ass match. And much of the column is actually about Chris Jericho and how, you know, selfless he typically has been in terms of working with the younger guys. He was one of the earliest guys to work with John Cena back in 2002 when he made his debut. And really just talking about Jericho's value. It's not even so much about Jericho and Fandango as much, I think, as the column is about the value that Chris Jericho, even as a part-time performer, brings to WWE. So you can go back and check out that column, a column that Michael Cole himself thought was pretty great. And my most recent one went up yesterday. It's regarding tag teams, the tag team scene right now in WWE. And in particular, kind of a look back at some of the tag teams that have yielded legendary single stars. You know, a lot of these Hall of Fame personalities that you see originally started in a tag team. Bret Hart, of course, Shawn Michaels, just Edge, Jeff Hardy. Even JBL, who I neglected to mention in that column, JBL himself actually didn't start as part of a tag team. He actually started as a singles, ironically managed by Zeb Coulter back in the day, but obviously had his greatest success as part of the APA and then went on from there to be WWE champion. And so much of this column is focused on where is the next big single star going to come from? I mean, who will be that next big breakout star? Are there any people from the current tag team scene in WWE who you could see, who I could see, going on to be the next big single star, the next big world champion? And there are a few people. So that's really what much of the column is focused on. It's an interesting look at who I think will be the next person or people to break out. And quite frankly, the people who are currently part of tag teams in WWE who I don't think have much of a singles future. Maybe I'm wrong, but you can chime in on that. So both of those columns are up on layfieldreport.com right now. Please check them out and leave some feedback. And also, so you know, my final Walking Dead blog is up tonight. Unfortunately, the season is about to come to an end, season 3. It's been a great season, I think. And my final Walking Dead blog will be up on Layfield Report either late tonight or by early tomorrow morning. That will be the last one, the final one. And so if you are a fan of the show, please check that out as well. And with that housekeeping out of the way, I wanted to mention something that I haven't really seen discussed in too many places. And it's kind of surprising to me, actually. This weekend quietly marked the 10-year anniversary of Stone Cold Steve Austin's very last match in WWE, his very last match in wrestling, which was back at WrestleMania 19 in 2003, Seattle, Austin and Rock tangling at WrestleMania for the third and final time. That was finally The Rock's redemption. He gets a clean pinfall victory over the Rattlesnake. And perhaps, you know, Austin has said that he knew, Rock may have known, but very few people were aware back then. And even if they were aware, I'm sure very few people would have bought into the fact that that would be Steve Austin's final match. But it was, and it was largely born out of health issues. You know, his neck was completely screwed up. He claims now that his neck is fine. I don't know that Steve Austin's neck will ever fully be fine, but that was largely why he had to retire. And he is one of the few, in fact, one of the very elite few, at least so far, to have attained the kind of stardom he did. I mean, he was arguably the biggest star in the history of wrestling, and if he wasn't the biggest, he was certainly in the top three in this country. I defy you to find me two other people who will go down as being more popular than Stone Cold Steve Austin was at his peak. You could say Rock, you could say Hogan. Those would probably be the three. And yet, Austin has stuck to his guns. He has not come back. He has said that he feels he could come back if he wanted to have one more run, if he wanted to have one more match. And there's certainly been a lot of, I think, clamoring for a Steve Austin CM Punk match. CM Punk surely wants the match. They were teasing it quite a bit. I think they were even teasing it with the build-up to that WWE 13 video game. They had that great sit-down interview moderated by Jim Ross, which was just to promote the game, but it stoked the fires as far as getting people to want to see a possible Austin versus Punk match. And I still think Punk would be the best opponent for Austin if he were to come back. And next year, I feel like next year is it. I mean, either Austin comes back next year for that one final match against Punk or whoever, you know, at WrestleMania 30, or he doesn't come back at all. You know, I was thinking and hoping he would come back this year because it would coincide with the 10-year anniversary of his last match. And Austin had major knee surgery many months ago. I know he's still recuperating from that. Austin has said he will not be at WrestleMania 29. I don't believe he's going to be part of any of the festivities, signings, you know, at Access or any of that. So Austin will not be in New York and New Jersey this year. But as far as New Orleans next year, it's up in the air. You know, Austin's going to be 50 years old, and he's keeping very busy. He's got a couple of TV shows, I think, on is it CMT or something that he's hosting, Redneck Island. He just signed on for another show. I think that's actually going to be a reality show based on his ranch down in Texas, the Broken Skull Ranch. He just signed a deal for another TV show. So, you know, Austin seems to be very happy. He's probably making good money. He's keeping busy. And, you know, I don't know that there's really a need for Steve Austin to risk his health by coming back and having, you know, a match that doesn't live up to his standards. I selfishly would love to see Steve Austin back for one more match, and I hope it happens. But I was kind of amazed that, you know, 10 years after his big retirement match, there wasn't more attention to the fact that Austin hung up the boots 10 years ago this weekend. And I wanted to point that out because, you know, it makes you wonder what if, you know, if he wasn't dumped on his head back at SummerSlam that year in 97 by Owen Hart, what kind of trajectory would his career have taken? You know, would he still be wrestling today? I mean, I highly doubt that. But how many more years beyond 03 would he have had? I mean, we'll never know, and again, I don't cry for Austin. He had a hell of a career, but it's just one of those questions that kind of lingers that you sometimes wonder about. So, yeah, 10 years ago this weekend, Steve Austin's career came to an end, and WWE has not been the same since. Let's talk about Raw from this past Monday night. Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, their second straight week in the state of Pennsylvania. The week before, they were in Pittsburgh. Now they were in Philly. And the show on Monday night did not end until 11:21 p.m. That's 21 minutes past the hour. That's nearly 3.5 hours of WWE television on Monday. And to put that in perspective, WrestleMania is 4 hours. And I'm fine with that because it's WrestleMania. You know, it's the biggest show of the year. They're trying to get everyone on the card. No problem. Raw going nearly as long is completely absurd. I don't understand if they insist on going this long with these shows. Why not try something different? You know, when they first announced the three-hour format, I thought adding the cruiserweights to the show, for example, would be a fun idea like Nitro did back in the day. You've got 3 hours to kill. Why not take one or two segments each week in that first hour to feature those guys? You know, get the show off to a fast-paced start, get people into the action. I mean, look at what TNA is doing with the X Division guys. They're bringing in names from the indie scene who go in there and they have some kick-ass matches. You know, sometimes there's spot fest, but, you know, it's always good action. I mean, why isn't WWE snatching up these guys? I mean, hell, bring back the minis. Remember Max Mini from 1997? I don't remember the minis lasting very long, but they kept them around for a little bit. They had some pay-per-view matches even on some of the in-your-house shows. Those little guys from Mexico, I mean, they had some real fun matches back then. I mean, isn't that what Raw is supposed to be? Isn't Raw supposed to be fun? I mean, instead they give us the same shit, only they spread it out over more segments, which is exactly what I feared they would do when they went to 3 hours. Oh, we have an extra hour. Let's just do more of the same shit, and we'll multiply it by, you know, four more segments. I mean, just try something different. I'm begging them. Just anything. What do you got to lose? They are doing good business right now, though, I will say. I mean, they had 18,000 people in the building on Monday, which is more than they have for most pay-per-views, I think. Yet you watch these shows, and the crowds just seem to die a death by that second hour. You know, and I wonder why that is. That's a rhetorical question, by the way. I know exactly why that is. But, you know, you're burning out the audience, and the last few weeks, it kind of makes for a dead crowd. I mean, not for every segment, but you can kind of tell that point in the show where the fans just are just begging for this show to end, or they're begging for something to happen here, because it's just way too long, and it's a problem. And the fact that they're going 21 minutes over the hour, I just don't understand why. Why? What is the need to go that long? It just doesn't make sense to me. CM Punk had Arn Anderson out there with him to start the show. Actually, the Arn did not have the glasses and the goatee that he had put on it backstage, so that was a bit disappointing. He talked about Undertaker being 20-1 after this year's WrestleMania. The gong went off, lights went out, and when they came back on, the Undertaker was there throwing bombs, beating the crap out of Punk. This was actually really cool, because when was the last time we saw the Undertaker on Raw mixing it up like this? I mean, probably Raw 1000 last summer. I think he made a cameo and helped out Kane. I think they beat up 3MB or something. Yeah, it's a rare sight these days. You don't see The Undertaker come out for much more than staring at somebody or staring at the WrestleMania sign and cutting the rare promo and, you know, wearing his hood. And he was out there just, you know, mixing it up, and it was actually a nice change of pace for him, to be honest with you. The best part of this whole thing, though, was Paul Heyman scooping up the Arn off the ground outside like a football and making a run for the end zone to the back. I think the Jets ought to give Heyman a call. Can't do any worse than what they have already. Fandango came out to make his entrance, and before he could say his name, Chris Jericho came out to attack him and chase him off. Crowd was pretty into this. Jericho stayed out there, had a match with Dolph Ziggler, which was not quite as good as their matches in the past, but still. Imagine this match as your WrestleMania opener. Wouldn't that make more sense? Jericho won with the Lion Tamer, not the Walls of Jericho. He wrenched Dolph's back a lot, kind of like he did back in the old WCW days. So that was a Lion Tamer. And after the match, Big E Langston laid out Jericho with his move that hurts your knees, I guess. I still don't know what that move is supposed to be or why it's supposed to hurt. So Jericho is down. He's vulnerable. Fandango comes out. He nails a pretty sweet top rope leg drop on Jericho, which he will regret doing in the next few years unless he finds a different move. I'm just saying. Kept yelling at Jericho to say my name, say my name. You could hear Jericho at one point telling him to keep his mouth shut and not to speak. Young man still has much to learn. But like I said in my Layfield column, there's no better person for him to work with in this position than Jericho. It's up to him to go out there at WrestleMania and have a good match, because I could tell you that Chris Jericho will not be the one to get the blame if he does not. Mark Henry destroyed the Usos in a handicap match. Alberto Del Rio and Antonio Cesaro then had a match. I believe they had a match just about 2 weeks ago, didn't they? This time Cesaro won. By countout, though, after Jack Swagger came out to attack Ricardo Rodriguez at ringside, Del Rio went after him. So, after the match, the sore loser, Alberto Del Rio, goes after Cesaro, puts the U.S. champion in the cross arm breaker, and leaves him laying. And I made a comment on Twitter. Del Rio's new remix music sounds like a version of his song that some house band would perform if he appeared on a TV talk show, like Leno or Fallon or something like that. Just sounds weird. So, another poor night for a secondary champion in WWE. Would Wade Barrett follow suit and keep the streak alive? Well, let's find out. Triple H came out next for a promo that saw somebody loudly chanting boring in the crowd. It was very noticeable on TV. And Triple H said nothing of great substance until his last line. He told Brock Lesnar he was coming to kick his ass. And this may have actually been the best Triple H promo in forever, because it was also the shortest Triple H promo that I can remember. He did not overstay his welcome like he normally does. So as he left the ring, Wade Barrett comes down. He has a match coming up next, and Barrett was very flippant towards the game. So Triple H kicked the Intercontinental Champion in the nutsack and walked away. And Wade Barrett is just writhing around on the ground in pain. So nice to see the old Triple H shine through. So nice to see him back. And that completes the combo. Another fine night for the Intercontinental and U.S. champions. Just burn the belts. Just toss them in a pile. Douse them in lighter fluid. Have a nice little bonfire. When they came back from break, Barrett's balls were still in great distress. I assume this whole thing was just to play off that low blow on the Bellator MMA show from 2 weeks ago, where that Spirit Wolf guy couldn't continue. When Impact goes off, Bellator MMA comes on, and I happen to be watching that first fight. I don't watch Bellator hardly ever, but I saw that fight. This guy got kneed low. Did not look pleasant, but he milked that thing for all it was worth. And I don't want to say that he was... Maybe I shouldn't say that. I mean, I'm sure, believe me, I would not want to get kneed in the balls either. But he was just flopping around on the ground. They gave him an automatic 5 minutes to recover. 5 minutes goes by. The referee's saying to him, can you continue? Can you get up? If you don't get up, I'm going to stop the fight. And the guy is not saying anything. He's not answering the ref's question. He's just, like, trying to get up, and he's holding the cage, and he falls back down, and it just was comical, the whole thing. So I don't know for a fact if that was what this was all about, but I took this to be a play off that. Maybe I'm wrong. Barrett did wrestle. He wrestled The Miz. I figured they were saving this match for WrestleMania, and in fact they are wrestling on the pay-per-view. That is now an official match, but they had a match on Raw first. Technically, it was their second match, if you count the triple threat with Jericho a few weeks ago. And I think Miz actually took the losing fall in that match. So Miz won here with the figure four leg lock. Pretty much nothing to it. The Shield beat Great Khali, Zack Ryder, and Justin Gabriel in a six-man tag. You can tell Zack Ryder has given up because he can't even be bothered to hit the spray tan anymore. He looks several shades lighter than usual this week. And afterwards, the Shield got Khali up for the triple team powerbomb, which was very impressive. Sheamus, Orton, Big Show surrounded the ring. They all brawled for a bit. I was amused at how Big Show and Sheamus were behaving here. They were palling around like they were the best of friends. So I guess Sheamus forgives Big Show for all those times he called him a ginger snap. The Divas were back on Raw this week. First time in over a month, I think, that we had ourselves some female action. In the ring, that is. That came out wrong. Very important I clarify that. Caitlyn and AJ had a non-title match that AJ won after Caitlyn was unable to get back in the ring before the 10 count. She took a disgusting bump into the barrier on the outside. I'm surprised she didn't break her neck the way that she hurled her own body upside down into that wall. It was just very nasty looking. And Diva's stopwatch had this at 2 minutes and 1 second. So some things never change. But still, good to see the Divas back on Raw. Main event was a Q&A session. Jerry Lawler was in there to moderate. They brought out a panel of legends to ask questions consisting of Mick Foley, Booker T, who replaced Ric Flair on the show. Flair was at the show. He was supposed to be in Booker T's spot. They sent him home after thinking he looked pretty unhealthy. And as it turned out, he has a blood clot in his leg. And he's taking medication right now to dissolve it. This has not been the Nature Boy's finest week. So, again, best wishes to him. Dusty Rhodes and Bret the Hitman Hart were the other legends. Bret was limping badly. He just had major knee surgery, so that's understandable. But he looked like he was not in the best physical condition. And the reception for Dusty Rhodes in Philadelphia, to me, was just so depressing. But, you know, that's what happens when you have so many kids in the audience. They just don't know who he is, or they know very little of him. They don't know that this guy used to be a big deal. So I'm sure it's just a generational thing. When I was a kid, I'm sure I would have reacted the same way if they trotted, you know, Bruno and Billy Graham and Bob Backlund out there. And in fact, when they did bring Bob Backlund back in '92, I don't remember people reacting very well to him either. And he was WWF champion for almost 6 years. You know, it's just one of those things where when you're young, you don't really know too much about the old guys, and I assume that's what this was about, but still very sad to me. Mick Foley went first. He actually made a really cool point, I thought, in this promo here. I'm curious, I wonder if he suggested it himself or if the writers actually came up with it on their own, but Foley said that he felt a weight lifted off his shoulders last year when Rock beat Cena at WrestleMania because Foley felt regret for causing Rock to lose in what had been The Rock's final match at WrestleMania 20. Remember, it was a handicap match against Evolution, and I believe Foley took the losing fall to Randy Orton in that match, and that was Rock's swan song, as it turned out, until he came back last year. So I thought that was actually a very valid observation, a very cool point by Mick Foley. After that, I just got angry listening to John Cena talk about how beating The Rock would be his redemption and comparing himself to Donovan McNabb, who can never win the big one, and now is remembered as being a loser. you know, Cena vowed to finally win the big one at WrestleMania. Are you fucking kidding me? Is that really the story they're going with for this year's WrestleMania main event? That John Cena, the company's biggest star, a man who's held 12 world titles in his career, can't live with himself, can't look at himself in the mirror unless he wins the big one? Do you know how insulting that is to your audience? What a stupid argument that is. Just completely dumb. Booker was next. He asked Cena why he thinks he'll beat The Rock at WrestleMania. And his answer was, because I have to. That's not much of an answer, if you ask me. Why does he have to? Is he fired if he doesn't? Did Nikki Bella put his ass on notice that she's going to dump him if he doesn't win? Booker, unfortunately, did not ask these important follow-up questions. Rock, of course, mocked Cena's answer, kept on him about why he thinks he can beat The Rock. He wanted him to give a legitimate answer. And then finally, John Cena snapped, screaming, because you didn't beat me. You can't beat me because I beat me. And that could be taken as a lewd answer, by the way. But I don't think that's how he meant it. He said he made one bad decision in their first match, and it cost him. He tried to use The Rock's own move on him, and The Rock, of course, made him pay the price. Making excuses like a heel is what John Cena was doing here in the segment. Rock said that if Cena really had him beat, then he would have beaten him, but he didn't. I have to say, this part was actually really compelling TV. I thought this was some of the best stuff we've seen from these two in the whole build-up to this match. And it got a ton of people thinking that John Cena is definitely turning heel at WrestleMania, which, of course, he's not. I just cannot see them pulling the trigger. I floated my idea last week about having the Shield come out during the match and teasing going after both men, and in fact, they end up helping John Cena win the title. But that doesn't mean they're actually going to go ahead and do it, and I'm not even sure necessarily that I would go with it. I just thought it would be an interesting way to turn Cena heel if they wanted to in that match. And kind of align him with the Shield, which some people might hear that and think that that's sacrilegious. The only way that would work, and I really have no interest in aligning the Shield with any current person on the roster, whether it's Cena, Randy Orton, or anybody, but the only way that would work is, again, Cena is the biggest star in the company, the biggest full-time star in the company, and if they wanted to really go full-fledged heel with him, and he could really knock it out of the park, which I think he could do. Remember, he used to be a heel. Then I could see that working, where if you aligned him with the Shield. But they'd have to go full on into it. You can't go half-assed, you can't be half-pregnant, so to speak, with something like this. He's either a heel or he's not. None of this tweener bullshit. And again, I don't see them doing it. But, you know, again, they succeeded here in getting people to think that John Cena may actually go to the dark side. So I say kudos to John Cena and kudos to WWE for succeeding in that. I can't tell you how many Twitter messages and emails I got about it, so obviously people really were buying into it. Dusty Rhodes finally chimed in. He asked both men, what is it that they really want out of this match? And John Cena said he wanted Rock to realize that he's the better man. They went face-to-face. Cena went for the AA. Rock slipped out, gave him a rock bottom instead. I don't think John Cena has ever taken the rock bottom properly, so this looked kind of clumsy. I still remember when he took it at Survivor Series in the Garden that year. They teamed up against Miz and R-Truth. I was at that show. Cena practically landed on his ass when Rock gave him the rock bottom after that match. That's kind of what happened here. But that was it. That was your main event Q&A. 11:21 p.m. was the time when this show was faded to black. Just completely ridiculous. You know, where is the Shield when you need them? Why aren't they storming the production truck and powerbombing Kevin Dunn for committing this great injustice week after week? Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to be at the WWE Hall of Fame on April 6th. He'll be inducting Bruno Sammartino in Madison Square Garden. The two met when Schwarzenegger was in the Mr. Olympia contest back in the day, and I think Sammartino judged a Mr. Olympia once that had Schwarzenegger in it. Schwarzenegger may have won that particular contest. And the two of them judged other bodybuilding contests after that, became good friends. So that's kind of the genesis of why Schwarzenegger is inducting him. Schwarzenegger actually just inducted Sammartino into another Hall of Fame, the International Sports Hall of Fame. And Bruno had actually said that he was planning on pitching the idea to Arnold, and I guess the pitch was successful. So Arnold will be there. Here is the current Hall of Fame roster as it stands right now. As I said, Bruno will be inducted by Arnold Schwarzenegger. Mick Foley will be inducted by Terry Funk. That is now official. Bob Backlund will be inducted by Maria Menounos, who is a huge WWE fan, a huge fan of Bob Backlund. She actually was at WrestleMania last year, wrestled in a match. It was her and Kelly Kelly against Eve Torres and Beth Phoenix. Now, for the people who are crowing and complaining, why is Maria Menounos inducting Bob Backlund? Oh, this is such an injustice. First of all, I don't see it that way at all. Who would you like to induct Bob Backlund? It's one thing if somebody was, for the length of their career, associated with somebody as a rival, as a partner. You know, Booker T, for example. I don't know who's inducting Booker T. There's no word. His brother Stevie Ray will be there. And it would make sense if Stevie Ray did the induction. It would make sense if Goldust did the induction, because Goldust was also Booker's tag team partner, and they had some very entertaining years together in WWE. But I think of Bob Backlund, the only name that really comes to mind would be Arnold Skoland, who managed him, and Arnold Skoland is dead. You know, there is no other person who I look at and say, that person should be the one to induct Bob Backlund. You know, I don't think Bret Hart, for example, even though they had a feud in 94, should be the one to induct Bob Backlund. There is no one person. So I'm totally fine with Maria Menounos doing it. You know, she's very good friends with Bob. She produced an independent film many years ago called In the Land of the Merry Misfits, if you want to look it up. And she got Backlund a role in that film. You know, and by the way, the trailer for that movie is just wacky. I've seen the trailer. I've never actually seen the movie. But she, like I said, a huge fan of his, a very good friend of his. And most importantly, she was very nice to me when I asked her some questions at the pre-show press conference at WrestleMania last year. So I have no problem. And she's easy on the eyes, too. So get over it. Trish Stratus will be inducted by Lita, most likely. That's not official. But Trish was taking a poll, an informal poll on her Twitter, and said that the overwhelming majority of people said that Lita should be the one to induct her. So I imagine that Lita will be there anyway, because Lita is with CM Punk, so she'll probably be doing the induction. And Donald Trump, no word on who will induct him. I would guess it would probably be his kids or one of his kids, maybe Ivanka or something. Or better yet, maybe they can bring back Bobby Lindsay to do the induction. Remember Bobby Lindsay, WrestleMania 23 against Umaga. That's what Donald Trump used to call him. WWE also announced this week that Sean Combs, better known as Puff Daddy or P. Diddy or Brown Duty, whatever the hell he's calling himself these days, he'll be performing a what they say is a medley of songs at WrestleMania. So if you are not a fan of these artists coming in and performing at WrestleMania, well, you're not going to like this. But actually, bringing him back fits the whole twice-in-a-lifetime theme that seems to be a perfect description of this year's WrestleMania, because, you know, last year we had Rock vs. Cena in the main event, right? Just like this year, we have Rock vs. Cena in the main event. Last year, Sean Combs was at WrestleMania. He appeared. He introduced Machine Gun Kelly before the main event, because Machine Gun Kelly is signed to his record label. So Sean Combs was on the show last year, and he'll be on the show again this year. And Maria Menounos is also back. She wrestled on the show last year. She'll be back to induct Bob Backlund this year. So you could probably call this year's show Repeat-a-Mania. It would probably be very appropriate.
Hey, Sala Monster. That's right, it's me, Noah Mark, hijacking your show once again. Warning you to watch out as I arrive in the New York area next week. In fact, all of us, the Four Horsemen, going to be a part of WrestleMania weekend, Access, the Hall of Fame, WrestleMania itself, and yes, even a three-hour post-WrestleMania Raw, Sala Monster. You think you're going to be able to handle that? I don't know. We're going to find out. And looking forward to doing the podcast with you next week, you, myself, and Brian Blade. Anyway, looking forward to seeing you next week, brother. And what the hell did Kofi Kingston do to get himself in the doghouse? Why does he keep on losing?
Why is he losing? Hopefully it's because he's turning heel soon. That's why. Talked about that last week. That's actually a great segue into all of the WrestleMania week events that are coming up that we are doing. As Noah mentioned there, Webmaster Mike, Brian Blade, and myself will be attending many events as part of WrestleMania Week here in New York and New Jersey. And it's going to be a pretty busy week, too. We're going to Access on Thursday. If you've never been to Access before, I said it last year. That was my first time going to the modern-day adaptation of WWE Access. Before that, the only similar event I had ever been to was the very first Fan Fest WWF ever did back in 1994. And again, I have pictures of that, by the way, for those of you who are interested. From way back when, that was the Fan Fest part of WrestleMania 10, a young Sala Monster meeting all the different WWF superstars at the time, including Vince McMahon, You can check those photos out on Facebook. You have to friend me on there for access. But last year, access was a blast, and so I'm looking forward to going. If you've never been, I would recommend going. The ticket is not that expensive. You get about 2-3 hours or so to walk around. It's not just about meeting the wrestlers, because I'm kind of over that in a way. It's more about the attractions they have, and it's just a lot of fun. So we'll be doing Access on Thursday evening, and straight from the Access session in Jersey, we are heading into New York City for the Iron Sheik Roast at Caroline's on Broadway Comedy Club in New York City. This is perhaps the event that I'm looking forward to most, almost as much as WrestleMania itself. The Iron Sheik Roast. I have no idea who's roasting him. All I know is Sheik himself will obviously be there. I don't know if any, you know, ex-wrestlers will be there to roast him. I would imagine, you know, you would expect one or two at least. It promises to be a very entertaining event, and I will certainly be live tweeting, I'm sure, from that event. On Friday, the plan is to do a roundtable sound-off like we did last year, which is one of my favorite sound-offs that we've ever done. It was myself, Noah Mark, and Brian Blade. That is the show where we will do WrestleMania predictions, for those of you who are asking about that. So that'll be episode 268. That will be the weekend sound-off for that weekend. There won't be another show the day after. The hope is that we'll get that up sometime late in the day on Friday before I head out to Ring of Honor, which is the other event that I'm attending that day. I'm going to be at the Ring of Honor Supercard 7 show at the Hammerstein Ballroom that night. Then the next night, it's the WWE Hall of Fame ceremony from Madison Square Garden. We will be there live. Possibly doing some $5 wrestling with Colt Cabana out in Jersey at midnight right after the Hall of Fame. We're thinking about that. WrestleMania 29 itself from MetLife Stadium on Sunday, and then finally we'll be at Raw the following night back in Jersey at the Izod Center. And then after that, I collapse and die. So it's a very, very busy week, but I am looking forward to it. There's also a huge wrestling convention going on in Jersey that weekend, WrestleCon, which I would have loved to have attended. I really was hoping to make it to the Chikara show. It's all of these independent promotions coming together. They're going to have live shows, and it's also a convention. So very similar to, for example, what we did last year. They have the Wrestle Reunion Convention. This is a different one, but I imagine it's probably very similar. I was really hoping to go to the Chikara show. I've never been to a Chikara show before, and I do hope one day to attend one, but it's at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and just, you know, with the Hall of Fame at 8, it just time-wise, I didn't want to run the risk, so it's not going to happen. But if you want to attend, you can buy a ticket to WrestleCon. It sounds like it'll be a lot of fun. The Ring of Honor show, by the way, that I'm going to on Friday night will be my first since 2009. I was going to a whole bunch of Ring of Honor shows from like 07 to 09, and I'm really looking forward to going to this one. I want to just run down the lineup really quick here for those who are interested. It's Ring of Honor's Supercard of Honor 7 from the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City. Main event is a World Championship match. Kevin Steen will be defending the title against Jay Briscoe. There's also going to be a Tag Team Championship match with Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly defending against the American Wolves, Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards. A Triple Threat TB Championship match, Matt Taven against Adam Cole, against the self-proclaimed icon himself, Matt Hardy. Number one contenders match, Jay Lethal, who I interviewed here on the Sound Off, episode 187. Those of you who want to go back in the archives. Jay Lethal will face Unbreakable Michael Elgin. And also, this is kind of cool, a match between Machine Gun Karl Anderson and Roderick Strong. Karl Anderson is coming over from New Japan to be on this show. And Karl Anderson is actually Tenzai's former tag team partner in Japan. I've never seen him live, so I'm looking forward to that. There is a 10-man tag team match pitting Team ROH against Team Scum, which is the latest, I guess, invasion faction in wrestling. They have or trying, anyway, to take over Ring of Honor, is Scum. Scum is comprised in this match here, Jimmy Jacobs, Cliff Compton, Rhett Titus, Jimmy Rave, and the man-beast himself, Rhino. They'll be taking on Team ROH, BJ Whitmer, Mark Briscoe, Mike Mondo, Caprice Coleman, and Cedric Alexander. Tag team match as well, ACH and Tadarius Thomas against QT Marshall and a mystery partner. And there was supposed to be a singles match. The world's greatest tag team explodes, with Shelton Benjamin going one-on-one against the outlaw Charlie Haas. That match was scheduled for Ring of Honor Supercard 7. However, something funny happened this weekend. Charlie Haas went and announced his retirement. And apparently this is not part of an angle. or a storyline or anything. Charlie Haas made the announcement last night at a Ring of Honor show, I think it was a Ring of Honor show, in Asheville, North Carolina. Cut a promo that he is now officially retired from professional wrestling. Cut a promo before his, I guess what would now be his final match, putting over the ROH roster. He had a match with a local wrestler in North Carolina by the name of Jeff Neal, and he lost clean via pinfall in the middle of the ring to Jeff Neal in this match. And apparently, again, nobody saw this coming. Afterwards, Charlie Haas went on Twitter. He said, officially retired, no match against Shelton Benjamin next week in NYC. Time to be a full-time dad and husband. I've turned my spandex in for scrubs. Thanks to all the fans throughout the years. I love you all. Stay safe and God bless. So there you have it. I don't know what that's all about. Timing is kind of suspicious to me. I don't know why you wouldn't at least go ahead and have the match as scheduled. And that was a match, quite frankly, that I was really looking forward to. I'm used to seeing Haas and Benjamin in tag team matches together. I can't recall seeing them one-on-one against each other. So, unfortunately, that match will not be taking place. I don't know if they find a replacement for Shelton, if that means Shelton is no longer on the ROH card next Friday. I guess we'll find out. But that was kind of a surprise announcement. So anyway, if you are not already following me on Twitter, now is the time to do so. At Solomonster is my handle. You can follow along with me wherever I am. I'm sure I'll also be live tweeting from all the events, including the Sheik Roast, if I can get a signal down there. I've been to Caroline's twice before. It's kind of a small-ish comedy club. I've met Ric Flair and Bret Hart there before. They've had some wrestlers Q&A sessions and meet and greets and stuff like that in the past. But that's certainly something I will be keeping you guys abreast of as the event is going on. So and I will let you know as well when the sound off goes up, since it will not be going up on its normal day next week. The hope is that it will go up later in the day on Friday at worst. If I cannot finish the editing process on it before I head out to ROH, I'll get it up early on Saturday. But follow me on Twitter. I'll give you updates about all that stuff. Let's talk about TNA here. TNA kind of gets lost in the shuffle with all this WrestleMania news, but there actually was a very good edition of Impact this past week, building to a huge live show on April 11th in Corpus Christi. That's the next live edition of Impact. That show will have Jeff Hardy and Bully Ray in a Full Metal Mayhem match for the TNA World title, plus Chavo and Hernandez will meet Austin Aries and Bobby Roode yet again for the tag team titles, and my guess is that they're saving a Gail Kim, Taryn Terrell match for that show as well. Actually building a women's feud that leads to a meaningful match. Boy, WWE should take note. But I liked Impact a lot this week. I actually liked Impact a hell of a lot better than I did Raw. TNA also did something this week that they never do. They sold out the building in Jonesboro, Arkansas. Now, what constitutes a sellout to Dixie Carter, who tweeted that? She tweeted that, you know, she was told they had a sellout. What constitutes a sellout to her, I don't know. The arena they ran fits over 10,000 people. Ain't no way they had 10,000 people in the stands for Impact. People who were there estimated that maybe they had 6,000 to 7,000 people, which is still very good. And you figure they block out a whole section of seats behind the hard camera. They have the upper deck tarped off. And you have the area tarped off behind the stage. Obviously, you're not going to put fans behind the stage. So it may have been a legit sellout based on how many tickets they made available, but I would be curious to know exactly how they got to that number. But in any event, they're doing good numbers for these on-the-road tapings so far. I'm happy to see it. They should have been doing this a long time ago. Although, interestingly, I did read an interesting nugget in the Wrestling Observer newsletter last week that each taping on the road costs TNA somewhere between $600,000 and $700,000. So, if they only tape on the road every other week, it's 52 weeks in a year, that's 26 weeks, that comes out to $17 million a year, which means, to me, Spike TV has to be kicking in some serious cash for this, because I cannot see how TNA foots even half that bill on its own. So it's definitely costing somebody money, but to me, it's worth it. It was open fight night this week, which I hate. So Jeff Hardy opened the show with a promo, Aces and Eights came out, and what followed was an insufferable promo by Ken Anderson. I cannot stand his delivery when he does these promos. The way he drags things out and then repeats himself over and over, I want to pop my eardrums with a rusty nail when I listen to this guy. The whole point of this was to set up an aces and eights attack on Jeff Hardy, which led to him challenging Anderson to a match in the main event. I'll be fair to Anderson and say that he and Hardy had a pretty good match at the end of the show, but I still can think of few people I would like to see less on Impact every week than Ken Anderson. Chavo and Hernandez came out for a match against Bad Influence to determine the number one contenders for the tag team titles. For some reason, Chavo was trying real hard to sound like his Uncle Eddie during his pre-match promo. He just came off sounding so lame. The match itself was frickin' awesome, and it was the best thing on the entire show. The crowd really got into it. Chavo and Hernandez were over like Rover. They had some real convincing near falls during the match. Lots of points where they had me thinking it was over, but it wasn't. And in the end, Chavo and Hernandez won, which made the crowd happy, but made me very sad. I thought it was full steam ahead with the Daniels and Kazarian versus Aries and Rude feud, but I guess they're delaying it until after the 11th would be my guess. We're still going to get it, hopefully. No way they lose the belts on that show. I mean, they would be idiots to take the titles off Bobby Roode and Austin Aries before doing the program with Kaz and Daniels. Of all the WWE concepts for TNA to blatantly steal, they had to go with one of the most annoying ones, which is the Did You Know fact. Only TNA is calling them Instafacts. I've got an Instafact for you. Instafact. Bending over and blowing yourself on TV may result in severe neck pain. Unless your name is Lanny Poffo. That guy is a freak. Who are they trying to appeal to with these facts? I'm already watching the damn show. You got me already. I'm a fan. Save that stuff for sponsor presentations and conferences. I don't even remember what the Instafact was that they showed. I was just so appalled that we now have to sit through these on Impact. Taryn Terrell is no longer donning the referee stripes now that she's a member of the Knockouts roster. She came out wearing a bikini that left little to the imagination. Drew McIntyre was a lucky man, that's all I can say. She challenged Gail Kim since it was open fight night, but Gail said that she couldn't challenge her to a match because Tara had already secretly challenged Taryn to a match, I guess. Never really heard of that happening before, but supposedly the challenge was already laid down, unbeknownst to Taryn, and Tara came out. She and Gail beat on Taryn Terrell until Velvet Sky came out to fight them off. I did not mind watching Velvet Sky running down the ramp. She was very bouncy on this show. They announced that next week would be the return of Gut Check, and they ran a video package featuring many of the previous Gut Check winners, talking about what it was like to win a TNA contract. The epic fail of this whole thing is that it featured guys like Alex Silva and Sam Shaw and Taylor Hendricks, and when was the last time you saw any of these people on Impact? The epic win here is that they introduced Scrap Iron Adam Pearce as one of the contestants next week on Gut Check. Now, it's ridiculous that somebody like Adam Pearce, 35 years old, 17 years in the business, has to even go through a gut check in the first place. But if this is how they get him on television, then I'm fine with it. His opponent next week is some Mexican luchador named Mango or Magneto or something like that. I don't remember. That's not important. The important thing is that Adam Pearce is on his way to TNA, and I, for one, am looking very much forward to it. If you're not familiar with Adam Pearce, you can find his matches and promos all over YouTube. He doesn't do high-flying, flashy moves. You know, that's not his style. In fact, in all honesty, he's not much to look at, to be perfectly honest with you, but he's a very good worker. He's very good on the mic. He was not only a performer, he also served as the head booker in Ring of Honor for a while. Some of the most fun I ever had at those old ROH shows was chanting Repo Man at him, because he bore a striking resemblance to the Repo Man, or so we all thought. So I remember one show in the middle of, it was some multi-man match that he was in, maybe a six-man tag or something. He knew it was coming. And he pulled out the Zorro mask that Repo Man used to wear to disguise himself, which was really just like a black sash that went across his eyes. He pulled it out of his tights, he put that mask on, and it got the biggest pop of the night. It was awesome. Adam Pearce is very good, so I look forward to seeing him on Impact. Sting and Hulk Hogan had an in-ring confrontation that got pretty heated. Hogan had to memorize an awful lot of lines, and he never stumbled once, so that was good. Sting is still trying to apologize to him for not misleading him, basically, for putting his trust in Bully Ray, which, of course, blew up in his face. And Hulk Hogan will have none of it. He blames Sting for being Bully Ray's biggest supporter, his biggest advocate, for getting Hulk to trust him, and we all know how that ended up. Hogan told Sting to get the hell out of his ring. Hogan got booed by the crowd in Jonesboro, heavily. And Sting said, "Make me," which got a big pop. So we have Hogan versus Sting here in 2013. I would point out that the first Hogan versus Sting match was in 1995, and it was WCW's main feud, really, for much of 1997. I would point that out, but we also just saw Sting versus Hogan in TNA 2 years ago. And Hogan could barely move and had no business being in the ring then, let alone today. And Hogan was still limping very badly here after his recent, much like Bret Hart, Hogan had some major knee surgery recently. You know, I just can't believe they're building to another Hulk Hogan match. I think they realize his days in the ring are done. I don't really think they're expecting Hogan to wrestle. Which begs the question, why the hell is Hulk Hogan involved in two of the biggest storyline feuds in TNA right now if he can't wrestle? Even if he could wrestle, why is he involved in the two biggest storylines? Right now, at this very moment, TNA is teasing an eventual Hulk Hogan versus Bully Ray match. Okay, if you watch television, they've never actually come out and said that, but one would be led to believe that that's where this is going, that at some point, Hogan is going to get Bully in the ring. And now they're teasing a Hulk Hogan versus Sting match. Again, why? What is to be gained from this? Hogan in the general manager role, I have no problem with. I think he's fine in that role. But building matches around Hulk Hogan that are never going to happen, I just think it's a colossal waste of time. I don't understand what they're trying to accomplish by doing it. Hogan is not a ratings draw. Hogan is not a draw like he used to be. If you put Hulk Hogan in a television segment every week and he brought in 500,000 new viewers, or if Hulk Hogan on a TNA pay-per-view was going to double or triple the buy rate, you know what? I can understand them wanting to do something. But he doesn't move the needle. Nobody in that company does. Flair didn't when they brought him in. Kurt Angle didn't when they brought him in. I guess you could say maybe for one pay-per-view, the pay-per-view with Joe that did 60,000, but... You know, why is Hulk Hogan in the year 2013 on this Impact show featured in two of the biggest storyline feuds? I don't understand. James Storm came out, challenged AJ Styles, was open fight night after all. They showed AJ in the crowd. All I can say to that is at least it wasn't in the rafters. They changed the storyline up a little bit at least, you know, the whole copying the Sting storyline. Aces and Eights attacked James Storm in the ring. AJ Styles did not come to his rescue. In fact, he just walked away. Didn't help him. I thought the rules of open fight night were that if you're challenged by someone, you have to fight them no matter what or you lose your job. And on this show, we had two people in Gail Kim and AJ Styles who blatantly defied those rules and nothing happened to them. So what's the point? Why, if somebody challenged me to a fight on open fight night, why wouldn't I blow them off if I know I'm not going to be punished? Kurt Angle and Eric Young came out to James Storm's rescue. This led to a six-man tag match with Storm, Angle, and Young against Wes Briscoe, Garrett Bischoff, and Doc of Aces and Eights. And the match went almost 15 minutes, felt like 50. Briscoe rolled up Kurt Angle for the pin after D'Lo Brown interfered, so I guess we're going to get that great Kurt Angle and D'Lo Brown feud soon enough. Next week, Sanjay Dutt is back. He'll be in the next X Division three-way because, remember, all X Division matches going forward must be three-ways. He'll battle Mason Andrews, who cost himself a possible job in WWE by going on a homophobic rant on Twitter. If you'll recall, he played Harold in those Team Hell No anger management skits. And the third man in the X Division match next week will be Petey Williams, the master of the Canadian Destroyer, back in TNA for the first time since 2009. He got a nice response from the live crowd, which is really cool considering he hasn't been off television. He hasn't been on television, I should say, in many years. And that actually should be a hell of a match. I'm looking forward to that next week. Main event was Ken Anderson and Jeff Hardy. Anderson beat Hardy by DQ after Hardy used a hammer on Anderson, the same hammer that Garrett Bischoff ran down to give to Anderson. So that plan backfired. And then Jeff Hardy went nuts. He was hitting Anderson with a chair. He pulled out a table. He pulled out a ladder from underneath the ring, which, hilariously enough, had the TNAWrestling.com website address down the side of it. How many ladders have you seen that have a URL tattooed on them? I can't think of many, although I'm sure WWE might steal that concept now. He put Anderson on the table. He climbed the ladder on the opposite side of the ring. I haven't got the faintest idea what Jeff Hardy was planning to do here because he was so goddamn far away. There was absolutely no way he was going to jump off that ladder and land on Anderson. But we'll never know, because Bully Ray came out, he rescued Anderson, yanked him off the table, and that's when Jeff Hardy made the announcement that his match with Bully in 2 weeks would be Full Metal Mayhem, which is basically a fancy way of saying a TLC match. Another fun show overall. That was Impact. These crowds really do, they add an energy to the shows that they were lacking before, so it just makes it much more enjoyable. Before we get to the mailbag, I would be remiss if I did not mention this story, because it just, how can I not? I'm sure all of you have heard by now what happened to poor Sean Waltman last week. Sean Waltman was at an indie show in a, I believe it was a triple threat main event. It was the send-off for Jerry Lynn. Jerry Lynn is officially retired now from professional wrestling. He's been on a retirement tour, which culminated in this match. And Sean Waltman was very honored to be part of Jerry Lynn's final match. He has a lot of respect for Jerry Lynn. They wrestled earlier on in both their careers. And unfortunately, things went a bit awry in this match. You know, Sean Waltman's, one of his trademark maneuvers is the Bronco Buster in the corner. Well, Sean Waltman went for a Bronco Buster in the corner, and the person that he went to deliver the Bronco Buster to moved out of the way. And in doing so, Sean Waltman landed crotch first on, I can't even say the turnbuckle, because I saw the video, and it looks like what happened is there's that metal part of the that kind of connects the turnbuckle to the rope. And he landed on that part. And in doing so, he quite literally tore himself a new asshole. And if you go on YouTube, you could find the video. It really doesn't look like anything at first. You could tell he's obviously in a great deal of pain. He continued to wrestle for a few more minutes, so I give him a lot of props. I don't think he quite realized how badly he was injured. I think after the fact, he said that when he went backstage, he looked in his singlet and saw just a pool of blood. It was so bad that he almost bled out. He could have died from what happened. And he went on Twitter to explain the situation. And, you know, even he said the video really doesn't do justice to the severity of what happened. And, you know, the hotel security had to call an ambulance. They had to perform this procedure that I didn't even know existed called a sphincterplasty. I cannot think of a more horrifying procedure for somebody to go through. It just sounds awful. And they did that to save him from having to walk around with a colostomy bag, which if that would have happened, that would have been just horrendous. You don't want to be walking around with a colostomy bag, I can tell you that much. So even he said, you know, it's hard not to laugh. He said, feel free to find it humorous, so I don't feel too bad about bringing this up. But, yeah, it could have been a lot worse. And talk about bad injuries in wrestling. We've all seen some bad injuries in wrestling, broken legs, broken necks, and people being paralyzed. Obviously, that's worse. But I cannot think of a more painful injury than puncturing your anus. And Sean Waltman's going to hear about that for the rest of his life from his click buddies. I guarantee you that. So he'll have some ribbon coming in his future. Time for the mailbag. If you have questions and shout-outs to send in to me, you have to email them, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please do not Facebook them or tweet them. Email me. I don't know if we'll be doing any mailbag questions actually on the next sound-off, being that we'll be doing the roundtable format. Perhaps we'll do a few. Send them in anyway. If I don't get to them on the next show, we'll try to get to them the week after that. Cody from West Virginia writes in, I'm going to New York for spring break, and since my birthday is coming up on April 12th, I thought this would be the perfect time to send in my first email to the Solemonster, as it's sort of like an early birthday present, and since New York is the Sound Off's home. I was introduced to the Sound Off through the TV Tracks YouTube channel. I really liked what I heard from you, and when I eventually listened to your full podcast, I was really happy because it was an hour, sometimes two, of you just talking about wrestling and or whatever else you wanted to that weekend. I've been a regular listener since around episode 214 or so, but I've gone back and listened to a lot of them, usually losing hours of sleep. I've laughed with your podcast, shared the same anger with you on some things, and I'm always awaiting the next one. I'd like to request a shout-out. My shout-out is to you, Solemonster. I love what you do. Now, that was a really nice email to get, I must say. So thank you to Cody. Orlando Garcia Jr. writes in, listener since episode 84. I would like to request a shout-out for my wife and I's firstborn, our daughter, Rayma. She's already staring at Raw when it comes on, then eventually gets bored like some of us. I would also like a shout-out for my best friend, Brian, who I recently got to listen to the sound of. My question is, with the booking in WWE, do you see Brock Lesnar beating Triple H at WrestleMania and then bringing him back for Extreme Rules or something like that? Actually, I could see Triple H getting his big win over Brock and then coming back at Extreme Rules with Brock winning the rubber match. You know, that way Triple H gets his big win at WrestleMania, but then they can justify it by just having Brock get his heat back before they move him on to the next big feud. You know, Brock is scheduled for Extreme Rules on May 19th. So is The Rock. They're both supposed to be on that show. You know, who knows? Maybe they'll do my my idea that I suggested a few weeks ago of a tag team match. And instead of doing it at WrestleMania, they'll do it at Extreme Rules. Triple H and The Undertaker against Brock Lesnar and CM Punk. You know, that's still a match I would love to see. I wouldn't mind seeing that. Arthur from Kentucky turned 15 back on March 18th. He would like a shout-out, so happy belated birthday to Arthur. Of any former WWE mid-carder who may return, as has been rumored, who would you like to see back in a WWE ring? You know, honestly, there's nobody that really sticks out to me. I mean, isn't that sad? If this were 15 years ago or 20 years ago, you had mid-card guys that meant something, that, you know, that people really liked. To this day, people still remember Mr. Perfect and Razor Ramon, Owen Hart, and Goldust. These guys weren't WWF champions. They were mid to upper mid-card guys, but they stood out for one reason or another. And these days, nobody really stands out. All the mid-card guys are kind of just, they blend together. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing somebody like a Shelton Benjamin back in WWE. He's a great wrestler, so I guess maybe he'd be one. But I can't say I'm terribly excited to see any particular mid-carder back on TV. That's why they're a mid-carder. Chad Joplin, Springtown, Texas, been a listener since August of 2011. I understand WWE is in a PG era to appeal to kids and families, but I think that promos would have more of an edge if curse words were incorporated a little bit more. I'm not suggesting they return to Attitude Era swear fests, but when hyping a match to create a big fight feel, I would like to see it a little bit more. I think The Rock is a good example of how to do this while remaining PG. Sometimes curse words can create an intensity in promos that other tame words don't get across. For example, John Cena saying, "I'm going to win the whole fudging thing." Well, I agree with you on that last point. Whenever John Cena goes into the whole bologna fudge and mustard stuff, it gives me douche chills. But you're right. You're not going to get Attitude Era style promos again, so I'm not really sure what you're expecting. You know, you've got The Rock out there throwing the word ass around like it's going out of style. You know, Triple H came out on Monday night. He told Brock Lesnar he's going to kick his ass. You know, every now and then somebody will throw a son of a bitch or two in there. I'm surprised they even get away with that much. I mean, what more do you want? Simon Penny from Norwich, England writes in, "I've been listening to The Sound Off since November of last year. Your shows have become a staple of my wrestling week. My question is, do you see the likes of Ted DiBiase Jr. and Michael McGillicuddy doing anything of significance in a WWE ring again, or has the ship sailed on these two?" Not on McGillicuddy. Supposedly Triple H likes him. He sees something in him. I think he still has a chance, preferably without the crappy name. DiBiase, on the other hand, I think that ship has sailed. You know, if they were going to do something with the guy, they've had him under contract for how many years now? You know, they would have done something with him already. I've never seen someone's stock fall as quickly and as hard as Ted DiBiase, and I don't know why. I don't have an answer for you. I know things didn't work out with Maurice when they put the two of them together. It didn't click. Didn't last very long. He never seemed comfortable with that pairing. I wonder if his religious upbringing, because he is very religious, is DiBiase, much like his father these days. I wonder if that and the fact that he's a married man had something to do with his hesitance in you know, kind of being with Maurice and that whole storyline, and if WWE held that against him for not being a team player. Again, that's just me talking here, but I do wonder about that. They gave him the $1 million title. They tried to make him a clone of his dad, which was just destined to fail. I could have predicted that, because he's not his father, nor should he try to emulate that character. You know, they turned him babyface. He came up with the whole DiBiase posse concept on his own, where he would tailgate with fans in the parking lot before the shows. I don't know if he still does it. Vince McMahon supposedly loved the concept. He loved, you know, DiBiase taking the initiative and doing that on his own. And I don't know what happened there. You know, John Cena once did an interview and said that he thought within 2 or 3 years we would see him and Ted DiBiase headlining a WrestleMania together in 3 years' time, and that was 4 years ago. J.R. Sanders from straight out of Compton, California. "Hey, Solomonster, I've been a listener since episode 236, and my question is about this transgender MMA fighter named Fallon Fox that everyone has been talking about. I'm sure you've probably heard of her. She was born a man and is now a woman. Lots of people have been debating whether it's fair for her to be fighting women because of possible advantages she might have, like bone structure and other things. What is your opinion on this matter? My opinion is that if she was born as a he, then it's unfair to put her in the cage with other female fighters. It just makes me very uncomfortable, the thought of someone who, up until 2006, I think that's the year he had what they call gender reassignment surgery. I did read about this story. The thought of this guy being allowed to fight women and beat up on a woman just doesn't seem right to me. Jackson from Washington, Illinois sends this to us. I've been an off and on listener to your show for a long time and a full-time listener since two Royal Rumbles ago when you called Sheamus as your dark horse winner. My question is about Randy Orton and what seems to be his long stagnant place, if not declining role, in WWE. Seems like not long ago Orton was a clear number two guy in the organization, but yet never seemed to take that next step into John Cena territory like I thought and hoped he would have been able to do. Now, with talk of him going heel, I wonder if he will ever get to that level to have a high-profile match with the likes of The Rock or Brock Lesnar. It just seems to me like he's always right there on the verge of a big push or a breakthrough, and then it either gets scrapped by something else, or in the past he's gotten himself into some trouble, and then they just keep him in the background for a few years. Well, you just answered your own question there. The guy's got two strikes against him in the wellness policy. And I get it. You know, WWE is never going to want to put him in that John Cena role. It's just not going to happen. I understand why it is that way. One more mistake and the guy is terminated. It's too much of a risk. Now, that doesn't mean I can't see a match with Brock or The Rock at some point, especially if he goes heel. I could see a heel Orton against The Rock, but carrying the company, you know, carrying a brand the way that he used to with SmackDown, I don't see it at all. You know, he could be world champion again one day, but that's not saying much the way the WWE treats that belt as second rate. He ain't going to be WWE champion, I don't think. Let's just put it that way. Troy from Los Angeles, longtime listener since the double-digit sound-off days. I really enjoyed your story on last week's sound-off where you went to the Raw show in 03, sick as a dog. It reminded me of last year when I went to TNA's Bound for Glory, a show I was looking forward to for months. First TNA show ever, in fact, and I was sick. I still dragged my ass out there, and of course it was totally worth it. What is the most irrational thing you have ever done to see a wrestling show? I don't know that I've ever done anything irrational. You know, I don't go begging for tickets on the street corner or, you know, whoring myself out or anything like that, if that's what you're implying. I used to routinely win tickets from a radio station here in New York like seven different times, maybe eight. I'm not even exaggerating. I would win tickets mostly to Monday Night Raw tapings. I think I might have won tickets to a house show once, but everything else was whenever Raw would come to town. In fact, the very first Raw that I ever attended was at what is now the Izod Center, which is where I'll be coming up this week. It was a Raw taping. That was the night where I met Owen Hart, in fact, less than a year before he died. Those were tickets that I won by calling into the radio station. I think I was caller 34, you had to be. And I won. And then later, when I would win tickets, I used to enlist my brother's help, my friend's help, my mother's help. I mean, whoever I could find to help call in simultaneously with me on different phone lines, obviously. So it would increase our chances of winning. I don't know if you would call that irrational. I call that smart and successful since I won seven times. But that would be the craziest thing I ever did for tickets. Troy's second question here has to do with The Walking Dead and tonight's finale. Who do you think kills Philip, a.k.a. the governor? I like the way they've set it up where lots of different people from Rick's group, including Rick himself, have a motivation for wanting to kill the governor. Daryl, obviously, for what happened to his brother last week. Glenn, for what the governor did to Maggie, or almost did to Maggie. Andrea, who had two different chances to kill this guy so far and failed. I'm thinking it's going to be Maggie, you know, for what, again, for what he did to her or almost did to her. I think it would be sweet revenge for her to be the one that takes him down. Daryl or Rick almost seem too obvious to me. But then again, I mean, who's to say the governor is going to die in the first place? It's almost a shame to see such a great character killed off like that. But my vote goes to Maggie or Milton. Milton is my dark horse pick. So that's it for the mailbag this week. Keep sending in those questions, thesolemonster@gmail.com. I want to take this opportunity here to wish a very happy 9-year anniversary to sescoops.com. Webmaster Mike put a very fun post up on sescoops, giving you a glimpse into the last 9 years of web design. You can see the transformation that the website has gone through over the last nearly decade. And I have been part of the SC Scoops family for much of that decade, in fact, more than half. The sound off now almost 5.5 years into its run. And I thank Mike for that, and I appreciate being able to be part of it. So I wanted to take a moment there to wish a happy anniversary. You can follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster. Again, please follow me on there. I'll be at all the different WrestleMania Week events tweeting, and you can follow me there for updates on that. Facebook.com/TheSolomonster is the official Facebook page. You can friend me on there. I will approve you, and you'll have access to all these the fan access photos I mentioned from 1994. We have live debates during Raw and the pay-per-views going on the website. A lot of people have made friends through the Facebook page, so please be a part of that. Have my own YouTube channel. My username is TheSolomonster, all one word. No spaces, no hyphens. You can subscribe to my channel on there. I will post vintage, as Michael Cole would say, vintage episodes of the show every now and then, go up exclusively on YouTube. And you can subscribe to The Sound Off in iTunes. Type in Solomonster Sounds Off. It is free. Every time a new show goes up, it will be automatically downloaded for you, which would be quite useful this week. Coming up, given that the show is going up on an odd day, probably Friday. So subscribe in iTunes. And remember what I said earlier, you can now actually launch The Sound Off from your iPhone as an app if you want to go through that process. And let me know what you think about the new logo, about the new little bit of a redesign on thesolomonster.com. You can donate via PayPal, which I would very much appreciate if you would like to do that. You can go do all of that stuff on thesolomonster.com. So, that's going to do it for episode 267 of the show this week. I want to thank you all, including our new listeners, for tuning in. And I'm looking forward to episode 268, getting together with Noah and Mike and Brian and everybody for all the WrestleMania Week festivities. It's going to be a lot of fun. I hope that you'll join us and you'll be part of it in some small way. And if you're going to WrestleMania as well, by all means, please have a kick-ass time. We'll talk more about that next week. We'll have our WrestleMania annual predictions on the next Sound Off coming up. So, until then, be well, stay safe. A lot of fun stuff coming up. So we'll see you right back here next week on sescoops.com. Take care.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster Sounds Off on sescoops.com.